From Feature Story News in Washington and our bureaus around the world, this is FSN Reports. I'm Kevin McAleese. On today's programme, California police confirm that the actor and comedian Robin Williams' death was the result of suicide.
And entered the bedroom to find Mr. Williams clothed in a seated position, unresponsive, with a belt secured around his neck.
Also today, confusion and suspicion swirl around Russia's long convoy of trucks delivering humanitarian aid to East Ukraine. And the United States throws its support behind the formation of a new Iraqi government as the fight against Islamic State extremists continues.
It's very, very dire situation. The heat right now in this area is completely horrific. It's a disaster. Many people have perished.
That's coming up on FSN Reports after our latest summary of the day's headlines.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Nina Maria Potts. Tens of thousands of people remain trapped by Islamic State militants on a mountain in northern Iraq and are in desperate need of emergency life-saving aid. That's the warning from the United Nations as the world watches the jihadist insurgency underway in Iraq with mounting alarm. Members of a religious ethnic minority known as the Yazidis fled to the mountain 10 days ago after the terror group ISIS overran their town. U.S. airstrikes continued on Tuesday while the political turmoil in Baghdad unfolds, with Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki facing a 30-day deadline to step down. An estimated 20,000 to 30,000 people remain trapped on Mount Sinjar without food, water or housing, with international aid agencies warning of genocide. U.S. State Department spokesperson Marie Harf denied the U.S. has been trying to oust Maliki for months amid accusations his sectarian rule has contributed to the Islamist uprising.
This is up for the Iraqis to decide. Of course, we've had conversations with them as they've gone through this process. But quite frankly, for a number of years, not just in this Iraqi election, but in the last one, there were a number of rumors and conspiracy theories about the U.S. role. I would squarely put this report in that category. As I said yesterday, this was a decision for the Iraqis and solely for the Iraqis to decide.
The actor Robin Williams died of asphyxiation due to hanging. That's according to California police, who first learned of his death from a 911 call. Lieutenant Keith Boyd of the Marin County Sheriff's Office said a preliminary examination showed death by hanging. Williams' body had been found with a belt around his neck.
The caller was distraught and indicated at that time that was an apparent suicide due to a hanging had taken place and that rigor mortis had set in.
The last person to see Robin Williams alive was his wife the night before his body was discovered. He was found after his personal assistant became worried when he didn't respond to her knocking on the door.
And entered the bedroom to find Mr. Williams clothed in a seated position, unresponsive, with a belt secured around his neck.
Russia is sending a humanitarian convoy of some 300 trucks into Ukraine under the authority of the Red Cross. Shelling has left thousands in eastern Ukraine without access to water, medical aid and electricity.
The convoy will consist of 280 trucks containing 2,000 tons of humanitarian aid. Western leaders had warned that Russia may use a humanitarian aid mission as a pretext to invade eastern Ukraine, but Moscow stressed that Russia's military will not be participating in the humanitarian mission. However, NATO's general secretary insists that there is a high probability that Russia's military will intervene. Jake Rashbas, Moscow.
From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN. A controversial and experimental drug which was used to treat two American doctors who contracted the Ebola virus while working in West Africa will be sent to Liberia to treat other infected doctors. U.S. healthcare officials have come under fire for not making the drug available more widely. The World Health Organization has approved the use of the experimental drug to fight Ebola, saying the circumstances were unique. Ebola has so far killed 1,013 people in four countries in West Africa. Gary Alfonso reports.
Liberian authorities have confirmed that doses of the experimental ZMAP drug will be given to two doctors who had contracted the Ebola virus in the capital city of Monrovia. The doctors will be the first Africans to receive this scarce treatment. But the drug won't be available soon to fight the disease on the streets of Liberia, Sierra Leone and Guinea, where local health and security authorities continue to battle new cases daily. and airports across West Africa remain on high alert. In Lagos, in Nigeria, 10 people who had direct contact with a Liberian man who died of Ebola fever remain quarantined.
Human Rights Watch is calling for the United Nations to formally investigate the systematic killing of hundreds of demonstrators who gathered to protest the removal of the country's first democratically elected president, Mohamed Morsi, in July of 2013. Patrice Howard reports from the UN in New York.
Human Rights Watch claims Egyptian security forces committed crimes against humanity and called on the UN to establish an international commission to investigate six incidents involving killings by Egyptian police in the days and weeks following Morsi's removal from power. The report is based on witness interviews and video footage obtained by Human Rights Watch, which they say recorded brutal assaults by police on a number of unarmed protesters.
And that's the latest from Feature Story News. I'm Nina Maria Potts reporting.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Kevin McAleese. Welcome to FSN Reports. California police have confirmed that the actor and comedian Robin Williams' death was the result of suicide. Earlier, President Obama joined John Kerry and the Pentagon in tributes at the news of Williams' passing. A longtime supporter of US troops, the comedian had performed many tours to both Iraq and Afghanistan. The Oscar-winning actor was found dead in his Northern California home of Tiburon. FSN's Rachel Silverman is in San Francisco.
The Marin County Sheriff's Department says that preliminary indications show he died from asphyxiation by hanging. They gave us some more information about what they found when they entered Mr. Williams' home. They say that Mr. Williams' personal assistant became concerned in the morning when she couldn't reach him, when he wasn't answering knocks on his bedroom door. And then she found him in a room in the home, suspended from a belt, which was hanging from his neck and wedged between the closet and the door frame.
And we understand he was being treated for depression.
He was being treated for depression. The coroner says that they are doing toxicology tests, and the results of those tests won't be known for 2 to 6 weeks. But there is indication that Mr. Williams was severely depressed. He had been in and out of rehab and had recently gone into rehab just this summer.
Robin Williams was a huge comic and acting talent, and the tributes have been pouring in since we learned of his demise, led by his wife. And today we heard from the president himself, or yesterday, I should say, we heard from the president himself. But what's the reaction been in his home state of California?
Well, you know, Kevin, people are just stunned. It's stunning enough to hear that Robin Williams, who is this cherished and beloved comedian, actor, and really citizen of the San Francisco Bay Area, is dead. But the thought that he might have died from his own hand, and that he, who brought so much joy and laughter to people across the world, suffered from so many demons and dark side, and that we were unable to give him the joy that he was able to give to so many of us, has really set a lot of people back.
Rachel Silverman in San Francisco. The death of Robin Williams has been felt around the globe as fans and colleagues celebrate his work as a stand-up comedian and beloved award-winning actor. Stephen Farber is the president of the Los Angeles Film Critics Association, and he began by telling LBC's Nick Ferrari about the first time he met Robin Williams.
Preview screening for a class that I was actually giving through UCLA, a large kind of a continuing education, and we were showing the movie for an audience of 500-600 people, and I had the director and the producer of the film there, and at the last minute, Robin Williams, we had started our discussion, and he walked into the auditorium sort of talking as he walked up the aisle, just riffing, and came up on stage, and I tried to, like, interview him, and I became just sort of the straight man. And the butt of his jokes, he did like this complete improvisational stand-up routine for the audience that couldn't have been prepared. It was all completely ad-libbed and brilliant, hysterically funny. Everybody in the audience got this sort of free stand-up show that night. So it was an amazing indication of the talent he had in sort of the comedy area.
I'm looking at the TV screens and I'm seeing there's a shrine almost developing in Hollywood already, people leaving flowers and candles. What made him so special in your view, Stephen?
I think that it was not only that he had this brilliant, quick wit, but that he also expressed a lot of vulnerability in other performances that he did, like Awakenings or The Fisher King, oh, yeah, or Good Will Hunting, of course, that a Dead Poets Society, where I think people really warmed to him. He was not kind of the idealized movie star that we often see, but somebody much more approachable, much more human and recognizable, imperfect. And I think that people could respond to all facets of him. He was kind of a three-dimensional human being as well as this comic genius.
Stephen Farber, president of the Los Angeles Film Critics Association. And we'll return to the life and work of Robin Williams later in the show. This is FSN Reports. The United States is ready to offer more military aid to Iraq, but only under a new unity government. That's the message from America's top diplomat John Kerry and Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel in a bid to push for the swift formation of a less sectarian Iraqi government. The UN has called for greater international assistance to help the hundreds of thousands of civilians displaced by the Islamic State extremists. Meanwhile, a helicopter delivering aid to stranded Yazidi refugees in northern Iraq has crashed. The pilot was killed and several passengers injured, a New York Times reporter among them. The aid mission was in the Sinjar Mountains, where thousands of people have fled to escape the brutality of ISIS militants. Dominique Sorgel is in northern Iraq for the Christian Science Monitor.
Well, what military officials here are saying is that it was a technical accident, a malfunction in one of the Iraqi army helicopters. We don't have more details than that. On the plane, there was a New York Times team along with two Yazidi officials who are directing relief efforts and about 19 members of the religious minority also on board. Three children are believed to be in critical condition now at the Saho Hospital, where they were all taken.
That tragedy aside, can you give us an idea of what sort of scale the relief effort is now operating at and how successful it's being? Because the United Nations is talking about thousands and thousands more people trapped on the mountain in desperate need of help.
It's very, very dire situation. The heat right now in this area is completely horrific. So if you imagine you spend 3 hours in it, it's a disaster. I can only imagine that many of these people will perish making the journey. Many people have perished. This is what people are telling us when they arrive, that they see, especially of children that could not handle the heat and passed away from dehydration or lack of food. There is definitely a struggle to distribute for these families. The camp managers, the transit camp managers where the families are arriving along the border, are completely overwhelmed to provide food, water, electricity is not an issue, but the main thing is they are very concerned that they'll be facing a health crisis because of lack of sanitary conditions. And really, these families, they're arriving in a horrible state, and you see that the journey is very arduous. A lot of the people who are able to make the journey are young men. Women and children are also making the journey, and they arrive in just terrible conditions, exhausted, blistered feet and coated in dust from head to toe. It's a really, really harsh journey.
And where does the current fighting strategically stand in terms of the Kurdish fighters going up against the Islamic State forces? And of course, the US military involvement. Has that been effective so far?
Well, the U.S. airstrikes have been helpful in terms of keeping Daesh at bay from Erbil, which is the regional capital of the Kurdish region. And the Peshmerga have been taking the fight to Daesh in areas like Mahmoud and Air, which have come back into their control. There are other areas where it remains quite fluid. You have to understand that the landscape demarcates in some areas the border between the Peshmerga Kurdish forces and Daesh. And you have natural boundaries that are formed by rivers or by mountains, but sometimes the landscape gets reduced to plains, and these areas are where the situation is very, very fluid.
And there have been some important discussions concerning Iraq's political future today, which have been supported by strong statements from the United States for the newly nominated prime minister.
Yeah, essentially, President Fuad Masoum has appointed Haider al-Abadi, another member of Maliki's State of Law Coalition, to form a new government. And this comes 4 months after Iraq's parliamentary polls. The president's move has received a lot of support internationally, and it's also been welcomed by the Kurds, who are really fed up with all the happening in Baghdad and are really looking for a more solid partner to tackle this issue of Daesh, which is so pressing along everyone's border.
Dominique Sorgel in northern Iraq for the Christian Science Monitor. Mohammed Salah is a journalist based in the regional capital of Iraqi Kurdistan, and he told me earlier that Iraq has been in the grip of political infighting and turmoil for too long.
Well, definitely it has been clear to everyone in the country and also to the United States, which has been involved in Iraq for over a decade now, that Maliki is not the kind of leader who can actually lead Iraq out of this crisis. Maliki himself is a very divisive figure, and with him staying in power, the chances of some sort of political and military breakthrough in the country would have been very difficult. And let's not forget that despite the urgent need for military action against ISIS, this crisis, this situation has also very serious political dimensions, and Maliki as a leader has really lost the trust of other communities in the country, including Sunni Arabs and Kurds, but also he has lost the trust and confidence of a large part of the Shia community. That's why the Shia coalition, the Grand Shia coalition, the Iraqi National Alliance, realized that there could not be really any sort of meaningful breakthrough in the country as long as Maliki was going to stay in power. And that's why all these different forces basically at the last minute decided to go ahead and have a change.
Mohammed Salah in northern Iraq. Now, the Kremlin has announced that a Russian humanitarian convoy is on its way to Ukraine under the authority of the Red Cross and with Kiev's consent. Shelling has left thousands in eastern Ukraine without access to water, medical aid and electricity. Ukraine says it will block the 280 Russian trucks before they can enter the country so officials can transfer the cargo to vehicles belonging to the Red Cross and other agencies. Government officials in Kiev and Western nations have been concerned that Russia would use the humanitarian aid convoy to insert Russian troops into Ukraine. FSN's Moscow correspondent Tom Barton is en route to the cargo's destination.
The convoy of lorries left Moscow early on Tuesday morning, about 280 of them. Some photos shown on Russian media purported to show the lorries being filled with sacks of what the authorities say are grain, baby food, and some food supplies, medicine included, that are to go to the people in Luhansk, one of those cities in eastern Ukraine that is being in the centre of the battle between pro-Russian militants there in the east and Ukrainian government forces. They set off down towards the Ukrainian border near Ukraine's Kharkiv region, which is north of those of the fighting between the militants and Ukrainian government forces. and they have last been seen at a town called Yeletz, which is near to that border. They seem to have made up quite a bit of the distance on the way.
So, Tom, what's expected to happen when the convoy reaches its destination at the border with Ukraine?
When they get to the border, different things have been said about what may happen. The Russian government, primarily who's been spoken for by Sergei Lavrov, the foreign minister, says that under the aegis of the Red Cross, they will cross the border and then carry on their journey down towards Luhansk and those territories of conflict. The Red Cross itself has said that it hasn't been told all of the details about this and that it stipulates the convoy must be unarmed.
And Tom, there's been much confusion and suspicion surrounding this humanitarian effort.
Ukraine, for its part, has said varying things, but generally condemning the mission and saying that with any military or emergencies ministry personnel on board that convoy, it is not getting across the border. There's also been demands for the cargo to be unloaded and then loaded onto Ukrainian-controlled vehicles. A lot of suspicion surrounding this convoy. Many people saying Western governments warning against it being used as a pretext for the invasion of eastern Ukraine by Russia. Others suspecting that there may be weapons hidden inside the cargoes of these trucks, and a lot of suspicion surrounding the coverage of it. It was only really Russian state-controlled media that was allowed to wide-scale report on the start of this supposed aid mission, and other media was not allowed in. And the questions have been raised as to why that should be if the Russian government really wanted the world to think that it was an open and honest humanitarian mission. But very little known about it, very few official explanations of what exactly is going on, and a lot of tension in Ukraine and around this convoy as it gets closer to the border.
Our Moscow correspondent Tom Barton, and our apologies for the quality of that audio. Finally tonight, FSN Spotlight. And with that, here's Natalie Powell.
On today's FSN Spotlight, we return to the news of the death of comedian Robin Williams. Williams began his acting career in the late 1970s, starring in American sitcom Mork and Mindy. It was this that made the comedian come actor a household name. Speaking to BAFTA's Three Big Questions programme in 2012, he described the show as his lucky break.
I started off initially studying acting at Juilliard, and then I came home from school and left Juilliard to go home to San Francisco. I couldn't find acting work, so I started doing stand-up comedy. And then the stand-up comedy eventually led me back into acting, so I think it was kind of a backdoor thing. And then I got an audition initially for, if you're talking about getting into film and TV, I had an audition for a kind of a spin-off on Happy Days, because Gary Marshall's kid had seen Star Wars and wanted an alien on Star Wars. And Gary was like, I don't know if you can have an alien on Star Wars. And so I ended up writing this one-off character, Mork, to be on Happy Days. And I auditioned and got the part, and that was cool. It did well. And then eventually there was some commitment that Paramount had to ABC where they had to put a series on. So immediately they threw together Mork, and they found Pam, who had done a series, and they made Mork and Mindy, which was this big break for me. But that was really kind of a lucky coincidence. It's tough work. And my father gave me this advice when I said I wanted to be an actor. He said, have a backup profession like welding. But I think if you can find that thing that really gives you joy, that'll be it. Because for me, it's always been comedy and stand-up and acting, too, because of exploring behavior. But it's tough work, and if you can get it, even better.
In his later career, Williams made numerous visits to Iraq and Afghanistan with the United Service Organizations. There, he entertained troops and thanked them for their service. That's why the military community and the U.S. president have added their voices to the many tributes pouring in for the actor, thanking him for his dedication. It was something that had been very close to Williams's heart, as he explained in an interview with Time magazine editor Belinda Luscombe in 2011, during which time he was playing the role of a tiger on a Broadway show.
This is actually a serious play.
Very.
And does your appearance in the play reflect any personal feelings you have about the Iraq war?
I mean, I've been there 5 times, Afghanistan 6. My feelings are more about, I'm still wondering where the weapons of mass destruction, even though they had Hussein. You had the guy himself. You think if anybody knew, Saddam, what is it? I'm not telling. Too late. He's gone. How weird is that? Crazy. But my feelings about the war is just the idea of ghosts, especially. I mean, this war is I was just there recently, and, you know, they're winding down, in quotes. Supposedly be out of there by Christmas next year. So what do we come back from? What's the damage to the Iraqis? What's the damage to us? What do you leave from there when it just ends? You know, like you said, in the lines in the play about you Americans think when something dies, that's it, it's over. But when you go to the Middle East, you realize that there's a real sense of things stay around.
You did a stand-up tour in 2009, right. Weapons of Self-Destruction.
Yes, yes.
If I went to the right club on the right night, might I find you? Would you still ever...
I haven't been able to go out yet since I've started the play, but I think I'm going to have to start to go out again because it's about time. Now that I've got the gig, I can start to go out and, you know, do shows maybe on the weekends. And just because I've started, you know, I'm starting to get the urge to go back in again. And it's important to go out and do it because there's so much to talk about.
Is being funny sometimes a hindrance to social interaction?
Example, I was once walking in an airport and a woman came up to me and said, be zany.
No.
Big time.
But what about with, say, family? Do you sometimes...
Oh, no. It's years ago, I was reading a story to my daughter and I was doing voices and everything and she turned to me and said, just read the story.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Snap. It was
just like, yeah, and just stay to the main points.
Please. No, yeah. No voices.
No voices. Yeah, thanks, Dad.
How often does someone else make you laugh?
Oh, big time.
Is it kids or is it...
No, kids do. And comics of comedians that make me laugh. Chris Rock, Louis C.K., Patton Oswalt. And now I've been hanging out with Mort Saul, and that's been the gift. Hanging out with him is two things. It's history, but it's also just he's amazingly funny and still has everything going on all cylinders, which has been wonderful.
So you can, when you get older as a comic, you stay funny? You can still, or do you need to...
You try to stay funny as you get older as a comedian, and then you get to this point going, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for coming to my show. You try and stay funny, yeah.
Billy Crystal has said that stand-up is how comedians process things that are painful.
Yeah.
But does that mean we have to wish more painful things on you?
You don't have to, I find them. I was thinking, you know, that concept of Tourette's is a thing where people say kind of nasty things. Is there another thing of like a positive Tourette's? That dress is beautiful. Your legs are nice. So everything is wonderful. You really are lovely. Nice eyes. Nice eyes. So you know, your teeth are beautiful. Your teeth are beautiful. You're all right. Of them.
Why does it have to go the other way?
Yeah, well, because it's the subconscious creeping out. But then you're thinking, is there a nice side of your subconscious going, I really like you. I just want to pet you. In a nice way.
You are sort of unique among comedians, and I don't think you've actually written a book.
No, I hope not to. Especially a biography. I mean, I have a lot of friends who are authors who are great. I just don't have the discipline to do it. The learning somewhat, but the discipline is to really sit down and write a book. But I don't think so.
You know, you could just talk into a tape recorder, and then someone will type it up for you.
Then I should do a book.
You've gone through all my questions.
We did it. Every question! Good job. Yay.
A great loss for the entertainment industry, with such energy that went into every performance and interview. That was the late actor and comedian Robin Williams, who died at his home in California, aged 63. With FSN Spotlight, I'm Natalie Powell.
And that's the Tuesday edition of FSN Reports. If you'd like to contact us, you can email us reports@featurestory.com and follow us on Twitter. We're there @FeatureStory. But for now, I'm Kevin McAleese in Washington alongside Nina Maria Potts with The Bulletin. For everyone with FSN everywhere, have a great evening. Goodbye.